And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The United States officially rejoined the Paris Climate Agreement in February, and President Biden said tackling the climate crisis is among his highest priorities. But how is our region meeting the challenges of a changing climate? This week, the 2021 Midwest Regional Sustainability Summit examines that. The theme this year is Accelerating Action, the Path to 2030. This year's keynote speaker is climate policy expert Joan Fitzgerald, a professor of urban and public policy at Northeastern University. Her talk will focus on how cities can recover from the COVID-19 pandemic equitably while making environmental advances. And Dr. Joan Fitzgerald joins us now via Zoom. Joan, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure to have you. Also joining us today to discuss the upcoming event this week, our Green Umbrella Executive Director, Ryan Mooney Bullock. Ryan, welcome back to our show.
Thank you.
And also with us is Groundwork Ohio River Valley Program Manager, Sophie Rivas. Sophie, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Hey, Michael.
And Village of Silverton Village Manager, Tom Carroll. Tom, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you, Michael. Great to be here.
My first question is, who named this event? Because I can't say it. I've got a real problem with it. I've stumbled every time, and I want to hold someone accountable for that. But I'll actually start with Joan, because cities looking at how to recover from COVID-19 in a variety of ways. You tie this into environmental advances as well. Tell us the connection.
Well, one of the things we've discovered through the pandemic is the inequitable nature of who gets it and how sick they get. And that stems from living in crowded housing where you can't really physically isolate while working jobs that leave people exposed, and living in neighborhoods that have been subject to previous rounds of environmental pollution that leave people more vulnerable when they do get the virus. And so kind of laying that bare gives us an opportunity to say, okay, we do climate action. How can we do it more equitably in a way that, works first and foremost in these neighborhoods in trying to achieve sustainability goals?
Are we seeing American cities put a higher emphasis on climate change and the role that their communities play in it?
Some, yeah, it's a mixed bag, but I think just about every city is trying to set climate goals, create a climate action plan. I think the connection to equity is something newer. Two cities that I've been following that just changed their climate action plans to climate justice and climate equity plans are Austin, Texas, and Providence, Rhode Island. And I think we're going to see more cities follow that trend.
I wanted to ask you specifically about some of the cities that you think are setting a good standard for other cities to follow. I understand that you've argued in the past that some climate strategies in some cities, that they may be good intentions, but they, quote, represent random acts of greenness rather than integrated and aggressive action. Tell us what that means.
Well, what it means is that if you're really going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, we won't talk about adaptation right now, just the mitigation, reducing emissions, that has to be connected. So like your previous guest talking about the importance of not just having bus routes, but making them work for people so that they don't have to use cars, electrifying those buses, thinking about where people live, integrating that with building energy efficiency. So creating synergies amongst all the areas in a climate action plan is really important. I don't think we see a lot of cities that are integrating in that kind of way. And so that's what I argue, random acts of greenness versus really looking at how to connect all the various aspects of reducing emissions and creating sustainable communities.
One of the organizations putting on the 2021 Midwest Regional Sustainability Summit is Green Umbrella, and its executive director, Ryan Mooney Bullock, is also with us today via Zoom. Ryan, throughout this event, it's a three-day event, May 12th through the 14th, you're going to be covering a lot of ground. What are people going to take away from this about our area specifically?
Yeah, we're really excited to be hosting conversations on a variety of scales, both the, you know, our keynote sessions with Joan and some plenary panel conversations that are going to help us get into, you know, what's coming down the pike nationally from the Biden administration and others that can really inform what we can do locally and how we can be prepared to take full advantage of the investments that are coming down the pike. And so that's kind of a big theme that is going to be seen throughout the summit. But we're also going to be hearing from a very, you know, very local level examples of cool success stories. We're looking at, you know, what some EV charging for equity approaches that are happening across Ohio. We're learning about, you know, building energy efficiency and how do you use data to truly inform your best strategies. But we're also going to be hearing from students who are passionate sustainability advocates. And it's going to, I would say, be a real mix of inspiring innovation and really prompting the conversations that are going to help us to figure out as a region, what are our next steps that are going to help us really strategically get to where we want to go.
The theme this year, Ryan, is accelerating action, the path to 2030. We hear that year a lot in the context of climate change. What is significant about 2030? Is it just that it's a decade away and it's a good benchmark?
No, it is seen as the year by which, if we haven't done something drastic to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, we're basically going to hit not the point of no return, but a point of really dramatic consequences for our planet and all the people living here. And so 2030 is really put out as a landmark for we had better gotten a lot done by this year and have some real aggressive strategies moving forward so that we haven't put ourselves into an even worse position than we are in already.
Can you give us an idea around this region, Ryan, where accelerating action is most visibly needed?
Great question. You know, I think that your previous guest with Sorda was a good example because transportation emissions make up a huge portion of greenhouse gas emissions in our region and also lead to a bunch of health issues, as Joan mentioned. So when we look at things like transitioning vehicles to electric, to moving people out of single occupant combustion engine vehicles onto transit or onto their bike, that is an area that could really be a transformative piece of work in our region, both for greenhouse gas emissions, for health, for air quality, even for the quality of our green space.
Let's bring in Sophie Rivas, Program Manager at Groundwork Ohio River Valley. Sophie, this climate crisis is global in scope, but we can even break it down to the challenges it poses to specific neighborhoods. Some neighborhoods in our area are hotter than other ones for a variety of reasons. So how safe neighborhoods, for example, addressing that?
Thank you, Michael. So Climate Safe Neighborhoods is looking at cities across the nation on a neighborhood by neighborhood level. And when we do that, we find that low income and minority communities are hotter, they have more flooding, and they have more air pollution. So when the climate changes, as it has been, they're going to be more at risk. And so with Climate Safe Neighborhoods, we are targeting those neighborhoods and working with residents in those communities to find solutions that answer climate change vulnerability as well as other issues that they might face in their neighborhood.
I understand that in a partnership with the city, there was an intensive focus group in Lower Price Hill, for example. Tell us specifically, if you can, what went on there in terms of the evaluation and, if possible, the reaction of neighbors.
Yeah, so we found a bunch of residents in Lower Price Hill who were interested in these issues and very knowledgeable about their neighborhood. And so it was a sort of reciprocal educational experience. We taught them a lot about what climate change is and what it looks like for them at their neighborhood level, but also about what that actually means for them. They taught us what that actually means, what it means to live in a neighborhood that's hotter, how that affects your health and how that affects your medical bills. And so a lot of what we talked about was how we can prevent that from getting worse. And it was really well received. People were very excited, but also people were worried that all of the work that we did would be for nothing.
What was that concern based on?
Well, the Lower Price Hill neighborhood and neighborhoods in general have been engaged a lot and studied a lot, but without a lot of follow through. And that is something we are hoping to avoid. And one of the things that we did to avoid that is by creating what we call a climate resilience plan, with the residents targeting where they want to see improvements like rain gardens, tree plantings, green roofs, and then working on those to make them happen in the coming years.
Tom Carroll is the village manager at the Village of Silverton. Tom, we've talked on this program with you before about inner ring suburbs and the special challenges that they might face as they age. We've talked about evictions in your community. I was surprised, though, to learn, perhaps because of a bias, that Silverton has its own sustainability plan. Talk a little bit about how a community like yours, which is smaller, obviously, compared to Cincinnati, how you go about discussing a sustainability plan and why it's important to a village like yours.
Sure. So it's really important for every organization, public and private, to come up with its own plan and steps that it will take to reduce its carbon footprint, to achieve sustainability, to meet the goals that Ryan was talking about, the 2030 benchmark that we have to meet. We have to meet it. So Silverton started in 2018 and finished in 2019. With developing a sustainability plan where we engaged community members and did an open process, which was a lot easier in person, of course, before the pandemic. And in 2019, we finished our sustainability plan, and our goal is essentially to comply with our portion of the Paris Climate Accord obligations, even though at that moment, the United States was not part of the Paris Climate Accord anymore. So we're taking our own steps and setting our own benchmark as a community of 5,000. And the village is taking a leadership role, trying to both work on our own operations and what we can do to reduce our carbon footprint, and then also to lead and help our residents who really are hungry for some way to get solar on their own home and to take steps that they can. They're looking for a trusted partner, and we think an organization like a local government can really be that.
So when you think about your residents in Silverton, for example, Tom, are there very specific and individualized examples where they can see climate impacting maybe their home quality, their home value, their neighborhoods?
Yes, for sure. And it's not always easy for people to connect it, but let me give you an example. 2 years ago, we had a large rain event. It was a lot of rain falling in a short period of time, and that rain just exceeded the capacity of that stormwater system that was designed in the 1950s to meet it. So what we had is a relatively simple stormwater system with an 18-inch pipe that the water was flowing too hard and too fast and too much for that pipe to take it. So we had a couple of cars that were destroyed because they were on the street parked and there was street flooding. We had a couple of homes that have, as we do in our region, a lot of homes have a garage that is in a basement. And so the driveway slopes down and water spilled over the roadway, over the sidewalks and into their garage and therefore into their basement. So these types of events are happening with greater frequency. And we had the major storm in Norwood a few years ago. So communities like Silverton or Cincinnati are going to be facing more severe weather events, and we need to build our infrastructure and really rebuild our infrastructure with resilience in mind.
We're talking about the Midwest Sustainability Summit. It is taking place Tuesday through Thursday. We've got a link for details at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. Let's go back to Dr. Joan Fitzgerald, a professor of urban and public policy at Northeastern University. She will be the keynote speaker at this event, talking about how cities can recover from COVID-19 equitably while making environmental advances. Joan, I'd like to build on the question that I posed to Tom there. Is there a challenge in getting the citizenry to understand these individualized impacts? Maybe their basement is flooding more. Maybe their street is crumbling at a more rapid pace than previously. You're getting cities on board. You're getting organizations on board and large businesses on board. But it's probably going to take a lot of individuals to start to recognize this as well, won't it?
Well, it will. But, you know, in the end, if you want to have the big impact, it has to be with policy. So just take for almost every city, their major sources of emissions are buildings, the energy we use in those buildings, and transportation. And so, you know, we've talked about electrification. You know, if you've got a garage that's flooding, that's your first order concern, not, you know, getting infrastructure, charging infrastructure in your basement. So there's something where it's called range anxiety, that people are quite concerned that I don't want to get an electric vehicle because I won't be able to charge it. Well, if you can put a charger in your garage, that's fine. But there again, it's for people who can afford it. So, you know, and it's the same with solar energy. Those who can afford to take the subsidies are the ones who are going to build on that. So we look at different kinds of strategies, community solar, so that it can be more widely spread. Car sharing services that are electric. So for every solution we're looking at for mitigation, we should also be looking for a solution that serves everybody in a community. But specifically to your question of individuals, I think, you know, if you ask someone, what are you doing about climate? Most people would say, well, I recycle. And, you know, if you look at most cities, climate footprint, you know, recycle or waste is 7% or less of their mitigation. So we're doing what's visible and what people can do. And that's the problem with saying, well, individuals have to get on board with it. It's really our policy needs to be on board and create the incentive so that people do the right thing.
Sophie Rivas is program manager at Groundwork Ohio River Valley. Sophie, we had a couple of young people on who work with Groundwork Ohio River Valley not that long ago, talking about some of the work that they were doing during the pandemic in their own neighborhoods, and they were very smart and engaged. Young people are very clear about the seriousness of this. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I think that with young people, they are very aware that their future is in jeopardy, and they need everyone, adults themselves, to act now, or else their future just isn't possible. They can't think about what they want to do for a career if they're worried about whether the earth will be able to hold sustainable life for the, them and their children.
Tom Carroll is village manager at the Village of Silverton. Are you hearing from other small villages, townships, and cities around the region about how to do what you all have already started to do in Silverton?
A little bit, but not enough. I think quite candidly, Dr. Fitzgerald's right. We need policy solutions, and yet we shouldn't wait for state and federal government leadership on this. We should act on our own. So I do hear interest from neighboring Deer Park, for example. They're interested in putting solar on their building. Our shared fire service, the Deer Park Silverton Joint Fire District, is exploring putting solar on their firehouse. Great rooftops that when they put solar on, I check it on the weekend because I'm not working and the solar is still producing. It's fantastic. It's a great return on our investment. And it pencils out. It makes financial sense as well. So we really need broader policy action, but there are some local governments that are expressing some interest in it. And I'm really encouraged by that.
Ryan Mooney Bullock is the executive director of Green Umbrella. Ryan, this is a massive 3-day event. I was looking over the full list of events that you have and the various subjects and the number of panelists. Quite an undertaking, I would imagine.
It is indeed. We are now in the full steam ahead, all hands on deck phase of the event. But it's something that we really plan for all year. So we have a planning committee that works with us that represents kind of a cross section of our community, from education to nonprofits, government, business, to make sure that there's something for everybody in the event, which there is. This year, we have some field trips to kind of round out all of our, you know, virtual plenaries and breakout sessions. We've got some TED-style talks. There's going to be some networking and other time through this cool event platform. But there is so much going on. And you can check out the full program at MidwestSustainabilitySummit.org to learn more about all the exciting things that are happening this week.
Well, thank you for saying the name of it for me, but we've got a link to that at wvxu.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. Before we run, Ryan, I just want to ask, there's a lot of dread that comes with reading or watching things about climate change. I mean, we just talked about 2030, not necessarily being the point of no return, but being a very significant period in human history as it relates to climate change. Do you think if someone takes in a great deal of this event that you have coming up this week, that they will have a little more hope, or will they be spurred to action, or will there be fear, or some combination of all that?
I think people who attend the event are going to leave inspired and hopeful because there is so much amazing work happening, not only locally, but regionally and nationally. And yes, there is so much to do, and there is a role for everyone in this work. And so we just want to get this information out there and help people find out where they can plug in so that they can be empowered to be a part of the solution.
We got a call from Lee, who says she agrees with what Jones said about policy, but you need individuals on board because they vote in the policymakers. Joan, I've got about 30 seconds. Climate change can be hyper-politicized. Is that a challenge in implementing policy at the municipal level?
Yeah, I think it is. At some point, it's seen as a kind of a liberal agenda. But I would point to many cities throughout the country led by Republican mayors who are very enthusiastic. We have the mayor of San Diego, the first city in the country to commit to 100% renewable energy, a little town in Texas. So I think, yes, it has been politicized. And I agree with the caller that individuals, you know, are important as well because they vote. And it's great that we have both, you know, when you have state and national policy lined up. And that's what we're moving toward.
The 2021 Midwest Regional Sustainability Summit is this week. The theme is Accelerating Action, the Path to 2030. Details at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. Joan Fitzgerald of Northeastern University is one of the keynote speakers and has been one of our guests, along with Green Umbrella Executive Director Ryan Mooney Bullock, Groundwork Ohio River Valley Program Manager Sophie Rivas, and Village of Silverton Village Manager Tom Carroll. Joan, Ryan, Sophie, Tom, thanks to all of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
And another reminder, next week, as part of our ongoing series, Trust in Local Government, WVXU's Public Integrity Project, Cincinnati Edition will devote time each afternoon to discuss the growing lack of trust in our elected officials and efforts to reinforce ethical standards in public agencies. You can join the discussion right here on Cincinnati Edition, weekdays at noon. And we thank you for listening to us today. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstro. You can find all of our episodes online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.